Oh.
Hey, hello.
Hello.
Okay, I'm going to start over. I'm going to hang up. I'm going to call you right back, and I'm just going to hit record. And you think that would be best, or just should I? What should we do? What do you think?
I don't care. I whatever you're the one with experience here. I see
Yeah.
right before you called, though, this cattle truck just pulled up and parked next to me, and the guy is walking his dog. I'm hoping he's just, it's very loud. I don't know if you can hear it.
I cannot hear it.
You
Okay.
can't? Okay, good. All right,
Okay.
then I'll just stay where I am.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hang up then, and I'm going to call you back. I wish,
Okay.
I mean, we're recording right now. We could go with this. We could.
Like candid recording. Yeah, I mean, whatever you want to do, you're the one who knows more about this than I am. You've got so much, you've got such a
Yeah, but
personality
you know,
for it all.
podcasting is different than broadcasting, and I'm finding that I love it, but it's different. It's very, very different. So, I'm just going to hit the music and let's record. We'll see what we get.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Ready, set, go.
And the truth shall set you free.
Welcome to One Life Radio.
We are going higher indeed, everyone. Welcome to One Life Radio. This is the podcast after the broadcast. TM there, trademarked. And you know, it's morning. Like, and you do only get one life and you better make the best of it. I know
Yeah,
Autumn and I
especially
do.
the
Oh my gosh,
mornings.
Autumn Connolly, everyone. I'm gonna let the music roll a little bit and then I'll fade it out. You know, this is all new to me, so everybody be sweet, parakeet, and don't judge me, because you know, you do only get one life, and you don't want to walk around judgmental, right, Autumn?
No, oh no, that's no fun. You don't want to judge others or be judged. Neither one of those is fun.
Absolutely, I know, that's right. Okay,
It kind of has to do with what we're the book that I wanted to talk about, actually, is
yeah.
right along the exact lines of it. So
Well, great. I know
we're
nothing
all
about this
excited.
book. I haven't bought it yet. That's not typical. Typically, I read it from cover to cover and then I think about books for weeks before I go live and talk about them. But it's always great to have Autumn with us here at One Life Radio. And we've been on the air together for many, many years. And so let me introduce her officially. Autumn Connolly lives in the Sky Islands of Arizona with her four kiddos and her animal babies. She is the creator of Anvil Traditional Healing, a company dedicated to restoring microbiome health through diet. And Autumn is also a self-taught vegan chef, a cereal gardener, and an avid believer in and a teacher of the healing powers of meditation. You can find Autumn Connolly at meditatewithautumn@gmail.com. That's meditatewithautumn@gmail.com or her website, anviltraditionalhealing.com. That's anviltraditionalhealing.com. Okay, so why did you name your website Anvil Traditional Healing? I know, but people out there may not.
Oh, well, you know, there a twofold reason, or maybe more, but my father is a blacksmith, so he uses an anvil quite a bit for his line of work, and he also has an interesting little collection of them, you know, because it's an art form that's been around for a long time, so you can find some really old anvils and you know, they're kind of interesting. You know, it's just this huge hunk of iron, but it's a interesting sort of tool. And then it also is a word. The root meaning of the word essentially means that you're turning matter into you're shifting matter. You're basically it's alchemy. You know, you're taking one thing, you know, a hunk of unrefined iron or metal or it could be any metal really, but and you know, as we're talking, a hawk just flew by with a huge rat in its claws.
Oh boy. That's so typical. It's so typical of our lives. We both kind of live, I don't live out in the country per se, but I do have a lot of country life around me. You know,
Yeah, you do.
they tore down a whole, hundreds of trees to make way for the expansion of a funeral home. And I knew it was coming because the property all around my home is owned by Williams Funeral Home. And I knew that. And, you know, some of our dear neighbors and friends are buried in the cemetery, you know, which basically is directly adjacent. The back of my property. Well, and now really the side, both sides of my property is owned by Williams Funeral Home, where I think they're going to build an access road. But anyway, Autumn, they took down hundreds of trees, and I can't even tell you how disturbing it is, because trees are the answer, right? Trees are the answer to so many things. And it's so loud on my street now, and my property's not the same, and the animals are all disrupted. It is so loud. We forget the protection that trees give us, don't we?
Oh, for sure. Yes. You know, we have a dry wash in town, and it's basically, you know, like a riverbed. But then when we have our monsoon season, it actually does fill up quite, it kind of can turn into rapids. Sometimes if there's a lot of rain, it comes down from the mountains. But recently there was an environmental group in town, and they decided they wanted to remove all of the non-native trees along this wash area. I'm sure there's more legislation or whatever town talk involved in it, but they wound up removing, like you was just said, you know, 100 of trees in this little wash area. And it was such a beautiful, I mean, it was this canopy of trees as you're walking through. And it made me think, you know, this is one of those things where it's like, does the right hand talk to the left? Because on one token, they're right. The native trees can't grow when there is an overabundance of like invasive species. These are mostly Chinese elms they cut down. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, the wash needs those roots from that tree. Otherwise, when the rains come, it erodes the wash, and there are houses that back right up to it.
Wow.
And it made me think, you know, did they just structurally damage an infrastructure that we can't see because there's so much of a tree that's below the ground? And if you kill the top of it, it's going to eventually kill the bottom of it too. Mm-hmm. And so I was just, you know, having this whole mental rabbit hole of, you know, wondering.
It's disturbing.
If anyone else had thought about it.
We need to protect our trees. You know, we really, really do. And I have a bumper sticker on my car along with RFK Jr. for president, of course. But that says trees are the answer. But, you know, we really do need to protect our environment. That doesn't mean, you know, get crazy. But we shouldn't be taking down hundreds of trees. Speaking of trees, a lot of people don't know this. I'm sure you know this, Autumn. And we're kind of getting sideways here, but a lot of trees die over the winter, and the integrity of their structure is compromised in the spring. And a lot of times they die or they fall over, right? Branches fall, trees fall. And you have to be very careful out in nature, especially in the spring when you're walking around, because of snakes and trees falling.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, here, my son and I were just talking about, you know, we've got these big saguaro cactus, and they almost have no root structure at all. Mm-hmm. So they can just fall over. And these are, you know, huge, huge. They, you know, you think of them as being small, but they really are quite like a tree. They can be, you know, 12, 14, 20 feet tall. And when they fall, not only they're covered in prickly things too, but there's not a lot of warning sometimes. They'll just fall. The sand is shifted too much because their roots are very minimal.
Yeah. No, I've had a couple of, I don't want to get sideways here, but I had a friend who was tragically injured by a tree branch that fell and left her paralyzed recently, which is devastating for everyone that loves her, especially for her. And then a niece of mine who lives in Houston had a tree. She was on her Polaris on her property. She has like 30 acres of that's deemed by the state of Texas as a wildlife refuge. And she was out on her Polaris because her dogs were out running around, and she didn't, and they got outside the fence anyway. And like a 30-foot tree dropped like literally 12 feet in front of her. And it had it fallen on the Polaris, I'm not so sure, you know, you know, it could have done a lot of damage to her. You know, I guess a tree like that, they're heavy. You don't realize how heavy a tree branch is, even a branch, let alone a whole tree. Till you try to move it. But, you know, we're going to get back. I'm going to steer us back over here in a different direction, because you and I could talk for hours, literally. We could do a filibuster and speak probably for days nonstop, because we have so much in common and so many things uncommon as well. But, you know, to go back to the blacksmith thing with your father, a blacksmith is basically equal to today's engineer. Didn't a lot of blacksmiths, weren't they considered engineers back in the day, like 100 years ago? Or am I wrong about that?
It's It's interesting because in his shop, he has a huge chalk wall. And when you go in there, what you see are what you would expect from some more modern engineering type computer software. But it's all his handwritten notes. You know, it's a lot of math, a lot of angles, a lot of this. And it's always been really fascinating to me that you can, you know, take something like a math problem or an angle and then take all these numbers and somehow the blacksmith can turn it in, can shape a piece of metal to certain numbers with a hammer. It just seems bizarre to me, you know?
Yep.
It seems like, you know, when I think of art, I think of some of more whimsical sort of thing, you know, but to make something that's very specific, or he's made a lot of gates and things are very symmetrical, and or they have latches that need to work, or he makes a lot of structures. He's just built, he and his wife are building a house, and he made a lot of the beams and the hardware, and he's basically done all the metalworking in the house, and all of that requires such precision. And I just don't know how one would get such precision with using, you know.
It's fascinating. You know,
Yeah, manual tools.
Men love their metal, don't they? Men love tools. They like metal. They like to work with things. You know, oh, this is funny. So last night, I'm getting my pool area redone, you know, repainted and remasticked, however you say that, putting new mastic in. I was out there measuring it last night, the linear footage, right? Trying to figure out, I got to get temporary fencing because of the dogs so they don't, you know, step all over the mastic or the new paint, you know, with their paws. And so I was out there measuring it, and I've never had this happen before. I pulled the tape measure. It was a 30-foot tape measure so hard that it popped out. It just flew out, and I was like, oh my gosh, what do I do? There were screws on the back. I'm thinking, this is how unmechanical I am. I've tried to find a screwdriver that fit the little screws, couldn't find it. And I thought, do I really want to put this tape measure back together? And and I probably will when I have a couple of extra hours to fool with it. But I was, you know, and I have two other ones, but I was thinking, you know, what would Jesus do? Would Jesus put it back together? What would he do? I know what a man would do. A man would get the screws off and then put it back together, right? And take great pride in fixing the tape measure. Do you agree with that?
I think so, yes. I can see that being a possibility. I would probably not.
I folded it really, really nice so I wouldn't, hurt the integrity of the metal and how they bend it. You know, it's like, it's really cool how they invented tape measures like that with the metal where it springs, you know, back around and goes in and out. I don't know what the mechanism is inside, but I'm about to find out one day this week when I have a little more time. But let's get on task here and talk about what you wanted to talk about today is this book that you recently read called The Queen's Code by Allison A. Armstrong. It's fascinating if you just start looking at it, but it's a book about to transform the way you see men and women. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I do feel as though my perception has been a bit transformed.
Really?
Yeah, and you know, you and I are pretty similar on this level. You know, it's easy to rag on men, and we've also had a lot of personal experience where things perhaps didn't go exactly the way we wanted them to.
Uh-huh.
And that makes, you know, our historical perspective, it tracks with some of the silly stereotypical things that go on in male-female relationships. But in reading this book, what led me to this book to begin with is just I was reading an Instagram post, and it was talking about the difficulty of male-female relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the comments, this woman suggested this book, and I'm always up for book suggestions, especially self-help ones, you know.
Yeah.
And then the comments under her comment were, I guess people had Googled the book to see what it was about, and it was... They were so rageful.
Really?
Women saying things like, oh, great. Now we have to figure out what's wrong with men while they sit there and play video games. It was just one like scorned woman after another. And believe me, I feel all of that.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah, no, this makes sense. But I was left with this feeling of, huh, I don't want my perception of essentially, you know, half the population to be quite so negative. Mm-hmm. You know, I would like to understand, not necessarily that means that it's something that I want to tolerate or have in my life at this time, mm-hmm. or what have you. But at the same time, I'd like to understand and not turn into a man hater, you know.
Well, no, and you and I are not man haters. I mean, we may rag on men when they deserve it, but I'm far from a man hater. I had a wonderful relationship with my father. I have most of my friends are men. Best friends are men, hands down. The two people on the planet that I trust the most, I'm not going to say their names, but it's two guys, very different in their career. And maybe not so much their personality, but they're both men. And if I had to bury a body, that's what we joke about. If I had to bury a body, I'd call you, you know. And so, no, I have great relationships with all my brothers, and I love men. I do.
Yeah, you even have a decent relationship with your ex-husband and stuff.
I either text or talk to both of my former husbands almost every day, we're really good friends, and I love and care about them both, or I wouldn't have married them in the first place.
Right.
So
there's not this toxic thing going on. I mean,
no.
Any more than regular life is.
Yeah. And I appreciate you bringing that up, because we're not man haters. In fact, we might be love men a little too much. Might be the problem there.
Maybe that's the issue.
I like their energy. I like male energy. They're not as complex. You know, they're not, you know, that. They don't.
Well, you know, it's interesting because that is some of what this book talks about. And, you know me on a level where, you know, I can get pretty complex about very simple subjects. Mm-hmm. And it's neat to get into that. And it's a great way to learn or to explore, or to expand. But it does kind of explain, not that men are simple, because there's still a great deal of thought and effort that goes into what they do, but they're much more singular focused. Mm-hmm. And so when women have this diffuse awareness where we're just, you know, ping-ponging from, you know, socks on the floor to dishes to dinner to working out to, you know, our own lives, it's like, and men are focused on this one thing, there does seem to be these common rifts that occur between men and women, where women are more so expecting men, as the author puts it, they're expecting men to be the perfect woman. And
wait, say that again. Women. I'm confused.
They're expecting, women walk around oftentimes judging men as though they are misbehaving women, meaning their standard for perfection is the perfect woman. Meaning if you and I were roommates, mm-hmm. I would expect you to kind of do things similarly to how I do them. And you likely would, because you're a woman and I'm a woman. We have similar interests and whatever, you know, you'd probably treat the animals similar to me, or mm-hmm. do the dishes similar to me and things like that.
But I'm not picking up your socks.
Right.
I'm still stuck on that.
Where they go. Thank you very much.
I mean, socks on the floor, really? What are you, 12? I mean, what, did you not learn how to do that when you were a kid? I don't, you know me, I'm real neat and clean. Not obsessively, but I'm not picking up after another adult, certainly. Or a child, really, after the age of 5.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Me either.
Yeah. No, you got to keep your stuff in place and clean. But
I know. I believe everything has a place and everything should be in its place.
That's right.
It's not just a tidiness, it's an efficiency too. It's like, you know, if you don't know where something is and then you got to spend 20 minutes looking for it, or you never find it, or it's just a heap of stuff, like, you know, it's just nonsensical.
Yeah. And people like, I always lose my keys. Well, put them in the same place every time and then that won't happen, you know?
Right.
You've got to be organized in life. you know, it's just pretty basic stuff, right? But this book says, did you know that the words that most, it's asking, do you know the words that most motivate men to act are the same words women most avoid using? So what does that mean? You read the book. What does that mean, Autumn?
I know. So there are these key words. And so once you kind of understand, once you start going, okay, wait, a male reaction isn't the same as a female reaction because a man is not a woman and they were created differently to fulfill different roles in this human existence. Then you start going, well, how do I get, you know, my man or my man friend or whatever to not necessarily adhere to the way that I like, but how do I make it so he's not driving me crazy? You know, because if we are living in close quarters or whatever, you don't want things like socks on the floor. But yeah. If a man's natural tendency is not to care as much because his awareness is not diffuse, his awareness is, oh, it's time for me to shower. And he just undresses right there and goes to the shower and leaves everything on the floor. Mm-hmm. A woman is going, it's time for me to shower. She undresses, but she has this awareness of, if I don't pick up my clothes now, I'm going to have to pick them up later and they shouldn't be here anyway. And blah, 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 blah.
Well, I think it's because, you know, men are conditioned to women picking up after them a lot of times.
I think that that's some of it too. So some of my, I like the book a lot and it has certainly changed my perception and made me more aware of things. I do take a little bit of not offense, but there is something in me, a resistance that goes, well, hang on. I think that the way that men sometimes are treated. And I think there is a stereotypical nature that does allow men to be maybe babied a little bit more. And it makes the woman feel a maternal role for them, such as cleaning up after them and things like that. I don't think that's okay.
Yeah. And okay. We're probably going to have a part two, part three, part four of this discussion. Because this brings up so many things, right? You know, men basically, tell me if I could probably stereotyping here and I probably shouldn't, but I think that men get married. Number one, they want regular sex. Okay. Mm-hmm. They want someone to, take care of the holidays for them, take care of the kids, clean the house, be their secretary, all these things that if they had to pay someone to do it, it would be very, very costly.
Oh my goodness. I just had this conversation with Sally, my 13-year-old. Yeah, had this conversation with her.
You know, it's like a wife. I wish I had a wife. I'm joking.
He would have to be male.
But I'm saying a wife is the one that does everything typically. Just does the grocery shopping, plans the meals, pays the bills.
Even things down to landscaping.
Exactly.
You know? Like, you couldn't have a full-time employee in all of these categories.
Well, yeah.
I mean, even if you had just gobs of money, it would be like you're running a business, you know, with all these employees to do all these things instead of just having one person who does all the things under the household umbrella.
Right. And if there's any time left in the day for you to take care of yourself, you damn well better look sexy too and be prepared to have sex, right? Just like I can bring home the bacon. And that's the thing too. So I think that men struggle with women that have their own careers and their own money because they're not as easily controlled.
Right. And so that's the book kind of addresses that one with the, the rise of feminism due to wars and stuff like that, you know, and women getting further out into the workplace and what the book kind of categorizes it and women starting to have important careers, you know, rather than just secretaries. Not that being a secretary is not important, but, you know, things like doctors and lawyers and things like that, that women have essentially made needing a man obsolete because we can now support ourselves. Plus we're capable of doing everything under the household umbrella.
And we're not taking your crap anymore, you know?
Right.
Because and we so don't have to.
Right. And so what it says is it creates this adversarial nature between men and women, because now women, everything that they're doing is they're analytical when it comes to a relationship, because everything is gauged against, well, I don't have to have him in my life. So if he's not making everything better, then I'm not happy with the relationship because I know without him, I can do it all just about the same on my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you really are like a true heterosexual woman, you know, you crave it. You crave that male energy, right?
You do still want it around. So this is what kind of led me to go, well, wait a second. Like, why is it that men and women do seem to be magnetized towards one another? And even, you know, the men that I've had in my life, you know, they're genuinely sweet, caring men. And it's like, they want the same things. They too want, you know, crave the comforts of a woman and things like that.
Yeah.
But you know, what is it that stops us from being able to peacefully get along? And the book, so I, like I said, I have to put some of my resistance aside, because when I read some of it, it sounds like a little hokey, or it sounds like women's life purpose is to like serve the man. But there are some similarities in it that I can very easily parallel to my own life, where I go, well, hang on. I didn't realize that a simple phrasing of something one way could be horribly offensive to a man, and the other way could be something that is very open and loving and kind, and instills in him the desire to help me.
Yeah. And so tell me the secret. Because I'm not a sugarcoater, you know, and I'm very direct, and I can be incredibly sweet, because I am incredibly sweet. So are you. But yeah. I don't like to walk around on eggshells, and I don't like to go, because it's phony to me, like, hi, honey, baby, you know, would you help me with the lawn, and act weak. You know what I'm saying?
You know,
that's not me.
I just had is I'm not playing pretend with anyone.
Exactly.
Like,
so what do we do? Sorry. We're screwed. Right?
I know. The only, you know, right now I'm like a hand down because of my broken finger. But other than that, I'm pretty capable. Even my handyman has been like, whoa, I just saw you. Like, he's like standing there shocked because I carried 135 pounds of compost on my shoulder. Up
you
my
go, hill. Girl.
You know, and he's like, wait a second. I thought you needed me. He's like, I might need you.
Oh, that's funny. You don't even weigh 130 pounds. You. Holy mackerel. I thought it was a big deal. Not that I'm trying to compete, but last night I threw an 80-pound bag of dog food. It's the biggest bag of dog food. Yeah. Maybe it was 70 pounds, but I threw it up on my shoulder and I walked it into the house, and I was thinking just that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm very capable, and I'm strong. So I don't know. I don't know what the answers are. But this book is, now you've got me. And in fact, it's quite a business. It's Ellison Armstrong. It's a website. You can call and you can buy things. It's available in ebook, audiobook, and journey. And we're not getting paid for this. This is just a book that Autumn fell across.
I'm just trying to figure things out. I'm like, I'm trying. It is what you said. You know, I am a sweet woman. And I'm like, what? What is it about men that brings out this like horrible side of me?
I don't know. Probably from them trying to boss you around. I don't know. Or control you. That's the problem for me. I've never been with a man that didn't try to control me. And it drives me nuts. I'm a free spirit. It's funny. When one of my daughters, especially my younger one, will try to boss me around, I'm like, the last time I checked, my father was dead and I don't have any husbands anymore. So don't boss me around.
Okay, I'm going to be using that one.
Want to hear a good one? Oh my gosh. So last night I was talking to my daughter and my cat, Dean. You remember Dean?
Yeah.
Dean, the dance machine. He has this thing where he keeps going in the back of the house and peeing on the dog bed that I pick up every night and put down. I put it down every night. I pick it up every morning and I set it on this desk for Isra and Henry to sleep on, because they sleep right outside my door in case they have to kill someone. And so he peed on it. And I was at the laundromat last night, and I was telling my, she's like, what are you doing at the laundromat, Mom? You just bought a new washer. And by the way, we're going to have a show about that too. You and I'll have to have a show about what washer to buy in the future. I'm an expert washer, evaluator now, but anyway,
good.
Dean peed on the thing and I'm at the laundromat, and she goes, oh, he's really old, ma'am. I said, I know. I didn't even yell at him. I didn't even talk to him about it. And my daughter burst out laughing. She goes, you're a nut. You didn't even talk to him about it. She's like, were you going to talk to him about it? And I was like, maybe.
Yeah, like you can convey discontent to an animal for sure.
Yeah, and I just thought it was funny because you're an animal nut like me, and we rescue everything. We can't help it. So what's wrong with us? Why do we do that? Is it because we don't have a man in our life to nurture, and so we go after animals? Like, what is it?
Well, okay, so this is my thing with this huge puppy that I have, the finger breaker, and he is you know, it is a male energy. And you know, what's funny about it is when I brought him home, it was like having this little man in the house. And like he was doing a bunch of, I was joking with the kids and I was saying what to a girlfriend, I'm like, it's all this toxic male behavior, you know, like mm-hmm. he's too rough. Like he knocks over things and breaks them. It's like my house is a very dainty, like, you know, it's not delicate, but it's like, it's very feminine.
It's and pretty.
It's like he just came in and was like destroying pretty things that I hadn't even thought were destructible. And
wow.
You know, he's not trying to do any of it on purpose. He's just a big guy. And yeah. then my other dogs are all female. And so he, just the way that he interacts with them, I mean, it's like they look at him with just such disdain.
You think they hate him?
You know, I don't think that they care for him, you know, but he's part of it is that he's a puppy, but part of it I think is he's just a little bit different because he's a male and they're all mm-hmm. going, wait a second, like we've got a vibe around here.
Yeah. But I like that roughhousing. See? That's the part of the male energy I love. You know, you and I both rescued a big monster dog at the same, almost yeah. simultaneously, me here in Dallas, her in Arizona. And mine came from the same area. There's a really bad part. Well, there's a lot of bad parts of town in Dallas County that people dump animals. So anyway, so Shaggy, I call him Shaggy McGovern because my father used to go, the old McGovern. And I don't know what the hell he meant by that, but he used to say it all the time to his dog, Whitey. So I named him Shaggy McGovern. And the energy and how playful he is. Now Shaggy's between 2 and 3 years old. And, oh, my gosh, he's a Great Pyrenees. We haven't had him tested, but pretty much everybody, the general consensus is that he is a Great Pyrenees Golden Retriever Shepherd mix. And he's yeah. amazing, Autumn. He should have a cape. He's such a good dog. Like, seriously. And I'm going to brag about Shaggy for a minute. And so when I first rescued him, it didn't even take him a couple of days to decide, oh, this is my job. He sits out on the stoop where, you know, you enter in through my kitchen and he just watches the whole front end of the property. And, yeah. And anybody comes anywhere near the gate, he goes all the way down, like in a matter of seconds, and he barks and then he comes back and he gets on a stoop just to let them know, like, hey, I'm on patrol.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's right. And then the UPS guy delivered something and he got the package and he dropped it right by the driver's side of my car, my Subaru, put it right where he knew I would see it. That's how smart he is. But, you know, there's yeah. so many beautiful, valuable animals out there. I know you know
there
that.
Is. Yeah, yeah, this guy that I have, he's amazing too. I keep, you know, he's just amazing. And you know, I was looking for him to find a new home, you know, and I was thinking, I'll just foster him. I don't want to do anything drastic.
Me
but
too.
If there's somebody with a better home for him, then, but I broke my finger and I was right across from our town clinic. It was a while I was walking him and the leash pulled. And so I go into the clinic to see like, hey, what's the next step here? And as I'm in the clinic, there's a man that comes in behind me who's looking for a prescription. I kind of took note of him, but my finger was really hurting. So
was he cute?
Not my type. But, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, I'll say. And then I left and I decided, well, you know, this is the mom in me, you know, I'm like, well, my finger's sideways, but I still have the dog to walk and I've got the little girls who I said I was taking to the playground. So now I'm just going to walk to the playground. You know, my pain is the same whether I'm here or there.
Right.
So I took everybody to the playground and halfway there, I met my older daughter who was coming home from the library. And I stopped to talk to her. And right where I stopped to talk to her, this same man pulled in and parked and got out of his truck and he was walking into the pizza restaurant and he stopped me to say, oh, I saw your dog at the clinic. He's a good looking dog. And I was like, yeah, he is a good looking dog.
You know, he was trying to tell you you're a good looking dog, right? He was probably hitting on you. Matter, see,
so.
This is what we're talking about with the men's code. Like that's the kind of stuff they do, right? Instead of saying, hey, you're really cute. What's up with your dog? And you want to go out on a date?
Yeah.
He was following you. He was totally following you.
Well, he may have gotten cold feet when he saw the children surrounding me. He's like, oh wait, this is more than I bargained for. But and so, you know, he's standing there and I'm like, well, you know, he is a good dog. And then I was like, wait a second, are you looking for a dog? But Turns out this man is a former bodybuilder, and he's got one dog that's this brute of a dog, and who's like just the most rough housing, great, like, you know, just man's dog. And my dog Omchi, he loves rough housing, but none of my dogs will even give him the time of day.
Oh yeah.
And so he's taken him a couple times, and their dog, like the dog, I mean, just the male energy between these two dogs is palpitating. And so he's considering adopting him. He's had a few, he's been traveling a bit. So he goes there, and then he comes back to my house. And it's been interesting because watching this evolution of him, you know, in our house, the dog has to be so, careful about mm-hmm. who he is, but mm-hmm. in this man's house, you know, it's like, it's just such a manly energy that it's like, you know, anything is fair game. So I've got this video of the dogs running right at each other, banging into each other. My dog Omji just falls down on to the ground, shakes it all off, and then just goes right back at him, you know. And it's like, it's such a wonderful environment for him to get to utilize all of his maleness.
Yeah. So you named him Omchi. Is that Omchi? Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, it's Omchi. So it's
Omchi. Okay. Is that the name of a mushroom or something? What is it?
No, but that's a good guess. it's Om, the sound of the universe. Uh-huh. And then J-I is a Hindi, like a term of endearment. Like you would be Burnji. Like I would be my friend like Bernadette. And so it's my friend, the universe, you know, is his name. And he's the most friendly. He's so friendly. The only naughty thing he does really when we're out is he just believes everyone ought to pet him. So if somebody else walks by, mm-hmm. he sits down or he pulls. And mm-hmm. once they pet him, he's happy and we move on.
Sounds a lot like a man, you know, like a human man. They like to be petted. They like lots of attention. If they don't get it, they're going to find it somewhere else, right? So many analogous things here. Okay, so to go back to this the Queen's mm-hmm. I almost said the Queen's Gambit, which was a great series on Netflix, by the way. The Queen's Code, it says that most women unconsciously cause men to treat them the opposite of what most women really want. What does that mean?
Okay, so the way that the book explains it, and I do agree with the perspective, though I do think that there are some outlying information that makes it a little bit less exact, as the book puts it. Mm-hmm. But what women technically want is women, from a spiritual perspective and from just an energetic perspective, women are very powerful. And that's what the book speaks to. You know, there's a reason why women are the ones who have the babies, you know, why the women are typically the one who care for them. Plus, we're able to do all these other amazing roles in life, and we're still able to have our own lives most of the time. And it's because women possess an innate high power inside of them. Mm-hmm. Men are powerful too, but in a different way. Mm-hmm. But the way that the women are is when we sense a man trying to usurp our power, sort of like we talked about earlier, when someone tries to control us, mm-hmm. then what we do is we instantly emasculate them. And it can be done through a variety of ways. It can be done through words or through actions or, you know, through making fun of the way that they do something and making them feel small. And just it's women going, wait a second, I'm powerful, but I want to stay powerful. And therefore, I don't want my partner, my mate, to be more powerful than me. The mistake being that male power doesn't actually need to conflict with female power. They can both exist in their own entities, and they can, you know, they can cooperate with one another rather than one person having, you know, rather than a power struggle. And so, but women just, the way that our nature is to kind of squash anything that makes us feel less powerful. And we do it. I noticed that I actually do it quite a bit. And what really hurt me when I was reading it, although, you know, you don't know what you know till you know, but is that I've seen myself kind of do it to my son, who's now 14 years old, not mm-hmm. you know, not as aggressively as I do to the men in my life, but, you know, and I've started going, wait a second, you know, he actually, I know my son is an amazing human being, you know, he's got so many wonderful qualities, but when he does things that I don't understand, because from the female perspective, they seem insane. I will point out, well, you know, this isn't the way that things are done, blah, 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 blah. And sometimes I can be a little bit aggressive about it mm-hmm. and make him feel a little bit small. And I realize, well, wait, his perspective, you know, if you're going off of the book, is much more singularly focused. And in a singular focused perspective, what he did actually makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I meddled a little bit, you know, and it created a thing. It created this imbalance of power to where now he feels a little bit insecure about not pleasing me over something. And it's almost out of my own 14-year-old's words is he's like, well, it makes me nervous to do things like that for you, because if I don't do it the way you want, then you get mad at me. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, hang on. Let's address that issue. You know, how is it that you can still have some autonomy to do something the way that you want, mm-hmm. whereas I can still convey to you what I expect the end goal to be? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not so much different than a romantic relationship, because realistically, most romances wind up being a partnership and you're just trying to row your boat mm-hmm. in the same direction, right?
Right. And so, it's a dance, and it's a tedious balance, because you as his mother, or let's just say it's a, you know, husband, wife, or boyfriend, girlfriend situation, but especially as a mother, you want to teach him how to do things well. And right. sometimes you do need to accept a little bit of criticism if you're not doing it right. Instead of, that word emasculate just annoys me, you know, where men, oh, you're emasculating me, whatever, you know. How about you're not so sensitive? And I mean, I think some women can be bitches. Yeah. And they try to like put a man down, but it's where it comes from in your heart, I think, is what matters, right?
Sure. Yeah. That's what, so I actually kind of wrote, you know, I like to write, and I was writing about this recently, and, you know, kind of just feeling my feels and seeing, you know, seeing how to work through it all. And what I wrote was, you know, I have tried really hard and in earnest, you know, maybe I have hurt some of the men in my life, but it wasn't done out of maliciousness. Mm-hmm. It was done because I thought that I was helping, or because I was earnest in my goal to make things work, because I cared about the other person, or mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. I knew that we both had the same end goal and things like that. But I have realized that sometimes my earnestness can push people further away, because mm-hmm. I have been going about it in what could be perceived as the wrong way. Mm-hmm. So, I, like I said, there's a lot of factors in the book. I like what the book has to say overall, as far as I do not like, and I don't think you do either, I don't like having adversaries.
I hate it.
Yeah. And when there's a man in my life and it starts to become even this subtle sort of power struggle or male, female sort of, he said, she said business. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. I like everybody just to get along.
Yeah.
You know,
I never had an adversary in my life until my first divorce. And now we're right. friendly, but I loved everyone and everyone loved me. I never had an adversarial right. conflict with anyone in my life. And it's really interesting how certain people will be very passive aggressive and then try to blame it on you. Like it's yes. your fault when they're the yes. ones that don't want to look in the mirror and take ownership of their own bad behavior. You know,
yeah, for sure. And that's what I start to think too. I think sometimes the bad behavior that we experience in a relationship, it's very easy to point out what is and is not malicious. And there's not very much I've done that's malicious. I've been like cheerleading the relationship and, you know, trying to make sure things work. Whereas, you know, the other party has gotten their feelings hurt and then mm-hmm. chosen to do weird things. And it's like, wait a second, that's over the line. But mm-hmm. I do see how a woman who is unintentionally emasculating a man, whether through right. making herself appear more powerful than him or by...
Well, maybe she is more powerful than him. There's a lot of women that are more powerful than some men. But I have to say, you know, I don't like, and this is off topic kind of, but it just popped into my head. So therefore, I guess it is kind of relative. And I know a lot of men that are listening right now are going to completely agree with me. I think that part of this emasculation of men and making fun of them, belittling them, comes from television.
Yes.
We have had terrible male figures on televisions that just accept all this emasculation for decades.
Oh, yes.
Now. Think about some of the characters out here there where they always try to make men look stupid, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the women are just
and
like
the women,
cutting their eyes out.
That's right.
All the time.
I don't like that. And I think it needs to stop, but it's been going on for decades. If you think back, I'm trying to think of some of the old television shows that
it's funny because my example is always, and this is just such a random example, but it's always Everybody Loves Raymond. And I have said this in each of my relationships, each of my long-term relationships, I've been like, this is turning into like an Everybody Loves Raymond situation. And I don't want to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not the dumb man and I'm not the grouchy wife. Like, I'm not doing that. Like, mm-hmm. Can we get along? Can we be friends? How does one do that? You know?
Yeah. I never watched that show. My mother used to think that show was funny. She used to, I've never been one to watch a lot of anything. I was too busy making pizzas and flipping wings and trying to make money so I could be independent.
Yeah, that's the phase I'm in now. So all of my TV references are very outdated.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know what's on television. I can't stand television. It makes me nervous. I like my home quiet. And if I have anything on, it's great rock and roll, you know, or classical music, but typically rock and roll. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've always got it going, and you know, we just don't do a lot of TV either. It creates an energy, like a frenetic sort of feel.
It does.
You know, it has its time and place. My little ones especially, you know, they still watch like the ABC type cartoons and stuff here and there when I need a 30-minute break. But for the most part, even my little girls, you know, they recognize when they've sat in front of the TV too long, and they get up and walk away.
It's so not healthy for your mind. It really is.
It's not.
Well, I'm looking at the time. We said that we wanted to keep these podcasts kind of short so that people, you know, like, oh gosh, we only have so many hours of each day in order to do this thing called life. And so I think this is a good stopping point for both of us. And we have figured out a time that both of us are available to record, which is nice. And so we will continue this conversation and many more with Autumn Connolly in the upcoming weeks. And I'm trying to find your outline here to remind everyone where they can find you. What did I do with it? Oh, here it is. I moved it over here. Okay, so you're listening to One Life Radio podcast after the broadcast with Autumn Connolly. You can find her at meditatewithautumn@gmail.com or her website, anviltraditionalhealing.com. You can always reach out to me at info@oneliferadio or bernadette@oneliferadio.com. And Autumn, thanks so much for your time today. I want to hit the button to end the music, but I don't know how to do it. We don't have that part figured out yet. I need to do it, but I just really wanted to get started. I miss broadcasting on radio, but this is a nice transition for me because I really did hit a wall in January and I needed to take a break after 13 years of five shows a week. Man, it was killing me. I was like, oh my gosh, I need a break. Air.
Yes.
Yeah. So I love you, sister. And why don't we end the podcast? Here's what we do. We'll end the podcast with a chant and then I'll hit the record button. I'll take it off and we'll get it set and put it out on the internet here in the next couple of days. So what's your chant?
It's a simple one. It's a miracle chant. And what I like, it's just a partial one. It's rather long altogether. But what it loosely translates to is the one who has created me has also exalted me.
Meaning,
you know, everything is within us. You know, we are the one, our minds, you know, we can trap ourselves, but we can free ourselves through our hearts. And that's kind of a motto that I like to live by when I need to.
When the going gets tough, the tough get going and open their heart, right? And their minds. Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, so close your eyes.
Should I do my dingy thing first?
Okay, let me do the thing.
I got it right here. This is a beautiful big gold one. It's so nice. I keep it up in my radio studio. Okay, hold on.
Dana dana ram das kuru janasiriya tene savariya. Dana dana ram das kuru janasiriya tene savariya. Dun-da-dun-da-dum, nasa guru, genesidia, tine, savaria. 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 Danna danna dam nasa guru genesidia tine savaria.
Oh, I love that. I love that. You've got such a good voice. We'll talk to you later after. We'll talk to you later, alligator. Stay sweet, parakeet. Okay.
Bye.
Right, bye.